other than the people who need to have you buy their stuff. That's it. It's really about, if you look at it consciously and you say, okay, attire, atmosphere, appearances are all about how we wish to look at ourselves, present ourselves, be seen, so that we can do our dynamics. Then we can be honest about it. We can go around, I can totally be glitzy and say, I'm being glitzy because I'm doing my homework. And of course I want you to tell me how beautiful I am and how gorgeous this looks and how wonderful and oh yeah, that's a, black's the best color on you I've ever seen. Or, and yeah, thank you very much. And but we have to be honest about it instead of going, oh, it's just this little piece I got last week. And, you know, be real. Say, oh, yeah, I went to the drugstore last week and bought it. And I was really hoping you'd come along and shoot some heroin into me by telling me how wonderful it is. When you really get what it is and don't buy into all their stuff about how you need it and it's a requirement for life, then you can be real about appearances and attitudes. The same with picking your nose or dressing grody. That person that punched your buttons in is going to fit in so perfect somewhere else where it'll be neutral. I've already met a number of them, so I know you can't possibly imagine it. But my third wife spent many years in a commune. And some of her friends that came to hang out when we retired and moved to Hawaii, all of her moocher friends who were vacating the commune, they made this person you described look like angelic. And so I got to do a lot of homework on my appearance systems and my value issues. And now that I don't even notice them. If you and I were standing side by side out there, I wouldn't have noticed it. And it's an example most of you have heard me do before, and I will share again. Is the time, I lose track of time, but it's at least a year ago now. I was in a grocery store with a friend of mine. And for those of you who don't know about me, bring you up to date. I grew up in a family with a completely schizophrenic, abusive mom who yelled every day at all of us, said, I wish you all were dead and I hate you, and beat us constantly. Now, I'm the oldest. And she still tells this story as though she really believes this. And when I was 3 or 4, she hit me so hard she broke her hand. And from that point forward, she's been so mad at me because I broke her hand. My mom tells people, and she doesn't get how it sounds, she'll tell people, you know, he broke my hand when he was 4 or 3. She doesn't see, when she tells them, I hit him so hard I broke my hand, she just over her head. So this is what I grew up in, is this abusive war zone where you had to keep everything in balance. We always had to be watching out, making sure all your ducks are in a row, everything's cool. And I would, because my issue is about abuse, I don't have a value issue necessarily. Mine's about safety. Like my issue this week, once again, is safety. I'm dealing with homelessness, so I'm going, oh my God, here we go. I don't have a home. What am I going to do? I'm going to be some sick old guy dying on the street here. Beat up, of course, you know, breaking people's hands as they walk by me. It's all my fault. So the issue for me always was safety. And so I left home at 13 to get away from this lunatic. First thing at school I go to, first thing, this gang of people decide that I left Italy and came to America. And so here's this little gay sort of acting. I've always been real effeminate acting, so here I am real effeminate in little tight Italian pants and little Italian. Now they're okay to wear Italian shoes. People pay through the nose to wear these. Back then it gets the shit beat out of you. So I'm in New England, North Dakota, from Rome, Italy. Okay, everybody wears boots that they haven't cleaned for about 6 months. And I'm with my little Italian scarfies and my little tight pants and those, all my clothes custom made. In Italy, it's not a big deal. You go get your clothes custom made. There is no Woolworths. You just have the tailor. So everything fit me like perfect. So I'm going around in my cute little clothes, and of course the farm boys just said, him, he's next. Not because of how I was dressed, though I thought that was it. It was because my issue is I'm not safe on this planet. And so they proceeded to threaten to kill me. And then my first wife proceeds to threaten to kill me in my sleep. And my second wife, I actually spent a couple nights sleeping in my car with the exterior, with the pin switch alarms on, so that I at least would have a warning before she would come in and stab me, because I drove her so crazy. I hate that you're always right. I'm going to kill you. And she would flip out. Now, I thought, because I still had carried some of that forward. I must have really pissed her off. Or when I'm myself, it really is a dangerous thing to be. It was with the farmers, it was with first and second wife, and I finally got, thank God. So third wife never threatened my life, never threatened to kill me. And so once I started figuring out my homework assignment that I was creating from a belief inside that I'm not safe here, it was never about my psychic stuff. Amazingly enough, I've been doing readings all over the world since I was 5, in a very opinionated fashion in front of some of the most outrageous. The first at 5 was the royalty of Spain was my first sitting. And so I'm always saying opinionated. Nobody's ever threatened me on that. I feel totally okay with who I am. I feel really valuable. So nobody messes with me when it's about my psychic stuff or my opinions. It's about who I am as a being, how I appear, how I look. Whack! So it's very funny. Once I figured it out, I started looking around, and what I saw outside of me was so many people getting in car accidents. My first job, I became a paramedic. There were so many accidents happening around me my whole life. I thought maybe I should figure this out and learn to drive ambulance. I didn't realize I was creating it. All right, I just fixed it here, and it would save me 3 years in school. So I started doing ambulance, and I worked in hospitals as a consultant. I was a death and dying counselor for 6 years. You know, might as well take getting beat up to the furthest extreme. Let's see what it's like to die over and over again, 5 or 6 times a day for 6 years. And I finally figured out this was my issue. And the last time that I really got a strong reminder of it, that was a year ago, and it came in one of those blips, maybe a year and a half ago. My issue always saw people abusing children, and I always wanted to go over and let them have it, until I finally figured out the only reason I'm seeing it is because I have the issue, and if I want to stop from children from being abused, I have to heal myself. And once everybody gets healed from it, they'll never see it outside of themselves, so there is no need to have it happen. There's no need for the reminder system. Ever since I've done my homework on this, I've never seen it. I've yet to see, except one occasion, and it was a pop quiz a year and a half ago, where some guy was in the grocery store shaking his kid in the candy section, not at the checkout counter, but in that big long gauntlet that they designed to torture kids, row 6. First they lull you to sleep with vegetables, and then canned goods, and then flour, and the kid's kind of, and then candy. So the kid goes, whoa, candy, dad, mom, oh. And the parents are obligated to trash them, like, shut up, this is bad for you. This person, this dad, was shaking this kid going, listen, I don't care what your mom says, you don't get candy every time you go to the grocery store. And the kid's head was shaking. I was with a friend who grew up in an environment so meticulous that every day his dad would come up, military dad, four-cornered bed, bounce the quarter on the bed, would come up with the white glove and check for dust, and he was not allowed to come down to eat until he'd passed military inspection. And every day he had to have all of his work done. Everything had to be yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Clothes were pressed. Everything's perfect. He's a lawyer now, needless to say. That's where lawyers come from. Excuse me, any lawyers? He's a very good friend. This poor guy is so anal retentive. And everything has to be perfect and right. His car is a black car, and if there's a spot on that black, you have to wash a black car 10 times a day. Of course he would buy a black car. This is his issue. So it would, every day it would be in his face about not being good enough, not being clean. If I'm not perfect and clean, I'm a bad person. They won't love me. We're in this grocery store, and I'm saying, look at that over there. That guy's shaking his kid. And I was surprised because I hadn't seen it for a while. And I was going, wow, I must have some homework to do. I've missed out on this. But of course, I focused right on that. Coming around the corner, apparently, because I didn't see this movement, was some guy who had opened one of those little bags of chips and had finished eating it and was throwing it on the floor. And he said, look at that over there. And he goes, people like that should be put in jail. It's totally awful what they're doing. And he goes into all this, they shouldn't be allowed to litter. And I went, what? I thought we were looking at this kid who's about to die. He didn't see it at all because he never was physically abused. He does not need to see threats. His is emotional threat. I won't love you if your ducks aren't all in a row. I won't love you if you're not a neat person. If you don't make that quarter bounce off your bed, then you're not worth living. I never had that. I was a total slob. I was totally fine with the family as long as I didn't break my mom's hand again. So she started using utensils, so that changed that pattern. And I can talk about it lightly now because I've done a hell of a lot of homework on it, so don't anybody get upset or worry about it. I forget I have blues in the room. It's okay. I've really worked very hard on this. I can tell it now humorously instead of going, oh, it's really true. So it just was like so poignant to me how clear it was that here were these two grown people, and you would think with all the stuff about abuse going on that this would be obvious. And this person doesn't have an abuse issue, though many children from getting spanked or restrained do. And so here it is, black and white right in front of us, his homework assignment and mine. And it wasn't for us to go and tell that guy he's the world's worst trasher and this person you shouldn't shake your kid. I used to go and try to rescue these people, and what I realized, all I did was make it worse, I'm sure. I remember the times people tried to tell my mom, don't you dare do that to him. Well, you tell an abusive rageaholic, don't do that, and they'll go, yeah? Try stopping me from doing this. So as I bounced my head off the wall. And so I learned that when I tried to intervene, that really wasn't the healthy thing to do. I was just getting those kids in bigger trouble. And I could call the police and do all that. Well, that makes for very interesting dynamics. And when I finally got conscious about that's my mirror and I'm a dog barking at its reflection in the mirror trying to scare it away or change it, my main homework assignment was to go inside to the core cellular level and change it. And no matter how intense it was, thank you, universe, for sending me my homework assignment and dismiss it. And until you get to a certain level of health, you can't do that because you'll feel guilty, you'll feel bad. You're obligated to intervene to get your dose of medicine, your dose of reminder. As I got healthier now, I just need occasional, I guess, peep shows. And when I see it, I go inside and do some homework on my safety. And it works really good. I felt pretty safe for almost a year and a half now since that little blip. And this week I've gotten a real big blip. And today, as of now, I'm feeling much better. And so I got to do my homework. So how great to have the world's worst tragedy happen and you process it in 2 days instead of 2 months or 2 years or two lifetimes. If you'll just take the time to try this, to look at the world with these new eyes, to look at the world with new eyes and to consider the possibility that it really is you creating that and they're not bad people or they're not grody people or they're not beautiful or wonderful people. That however you're seeing it, favorably or unfavorably, it's you that created it, and it's about you. You can take a next step into really taking control of your life to being a conscious participant in creating what you want. And then thank those people. You'll never, ever, Annie, have to see that person or anyone like them again as soon as you go inside and correct the value issue. Now, it sounds so easy, and it really is. Now, granted, most of the people in here have done enough homework to know that they have some issues. It helps. It helps to know, well, maybe there is something I need to work on. A lot of people out there don't get it yet. They still think it's them against the world. And as you start seeing that you're not a bad person or you're not a good person, you just are. You're a human being. It's not about human doings. It's about human beings. And when you start just being, it's totally fine to operate on your inherent nature. And all children that we talked about earlier operate on their inherent nature. They just be. Have a feeling, let it go through, process it, enjoy it, no matter how awful it might seem. Yeah. Let it through and then be again. Yeah. And it's just, what does it say? It's just a feeling? I think Charles Kreiner, who does men's, comes in and does men's groups here, he goes, it's only a feeling. Yeah, that's how it feels sometimes. You try to remind yourself and it just, your whole system's going. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'll be in that place.
Well, I call those pop quizzes.
You know, when it pops up,
it's a pop quiz. It's a reality check. It always happens when you're asleep. When you're awake, you never get a pop quiz. It's always when you forget and you start going a little bit unconscious or a lot of bit unconscious. And so the homework is, the bottom line to all of it is, there is no reason to ever be angry at anybody. There is no reason to hate. There's no reason to disassociate or alienate. It's just thank them. Recognize it as part of your entire world. Don't separate from it. You know, by turning and walking away and ignoring it or turning right, as we talked about youth will do, go this way. All it does is say, well, I'll meet you again when the paths come back together. It's not about separating. This era is about the era of this decade of truth is about ending separation. It's a separation from who? Ourselves. Not from them, because they're us. You know, we have met the enemy, and it is us. That's a very true thing. It goes right back there. It's as profound as I'm rubber and you're glue. They're both are very biggies on the list. And the homework assignment is to stay conscious. It's to consider constantly the possibility that you created it, and it's not you against the world. And as you get it, where you put your attention, your energy does flow, like those big toes on our feet we talked about. If you'll just put your attention on possibilities, Reverend Schuller of the Crystal Cathedral down south in Orange County calls it possibility thinking. And that man is an example of ever seen this violet guy who says, I'm going to build this big crystal cathedral in Los Angeles and I have zero money. And not only does he do it, but it's televised and he's writing all these books. Amazing story. And his whole thing all the way through, he said, look, I'm going to do this on possibility thinking. He came in to do it. There's millions of examples. I just happened to see him this morning on the tube and I went, oh, there he is doing his thing from that place nobody said he could do. Not this lifetime. And just amazing. And you don't have to agree with anybody's religion or politics. It's all about what you believe is. You don't have to say, well, look at that person. They did it because they have church on their side, or they're Republicans, or they're Democrats. It's all just let everybody have their path, and whatever you really love about it or don't love about it is a direct mirror for you, and you get to do the homework. Does that make sense? Now, I want you to know that your brain is going to say this is real simple, so it can't work, because you've been taught in school that it can't work, you can't get it instantly, you have to go from grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can't go from grade 1 to grade 12 unless you're an eccentric or a genius or it's a miracle. And the system tries to teach you that everything has to be in progression, and that if you try to break that progression, shame on you. How dare you drop out of school? How dare you think you can jump a grade? And it's designed to hold you back. It even shows itself in like group therapies. One of the greatest gifts of people who are in group therapy is the day they say, look, I'm leaving. And everybody says, no, you can't leave. And they go, I'm out of this family. I've grown up. I've graduated. The shame pattern doesn't stop you anymore because you're healthy. Excuse me, I'm losing my mic. Losing my mind, too, it seems. So the bottom line, again, I have to keep getting back to it, is judgment is a tool. It's not something that you're supposed to learn to ignore or change. You guys get that? I do a good enough job pointing out how wonderful it is. So you can go out and say somebody's a son of a bitch. It's just not, it's none of your business to tell it to them. You don't say to them, you're a son of a bitch. You say, I really think that person is one, and why do I think that? And granted, it seems really wonderful in our society to go and compliment somebody, but there's no need to do that either. Just recognize that what you see in somebody energetically is also a reflection of you. Compliment them most favorably by saying, thank you for reminding me I had a homework assignment and you did it in a really wonderful way. And so that you include yourself in it, don't separate from it, don't make it they're the beautiful person or they're the bad person. They're your reflection. Own your judgments. Be as judgmental as you possibly can.
You mean you wouldn't say I really like the color of your shirt?
Yeah. Yeah, you can, but then you have to break it down. Why would you say to that person you really like the color of their shirt? You have to really think this one through. No, yeah. So, I really like how I feel about myself. Thanks for wearing that colored shirt. But own your power. It's okay to compliment people. I'm not saying don't. It's really wonderful to interconnect. But to really be as honest as you can about it. Our society, often if you say, I like your shirt, most people will say, I like your shirt. Gee, I wish I looked that good in it. Or it's very inspiring. I could use some energy like that. So it's very important to stay conscious of it. Now, Annie, I know a lot about you, so I know you're a little bit different than some people. You're always going around just energying everything. And so only half of your compliments are homework. But watch out for that half. You know, that part where you really do like something and you are complimenting because you're comparing yourself to it. That's the important ones. It doesn't hurt to compliment, nor does it hurt to complain, but to do them consciously is the key. Yeah. Once you start doing it consciously, you can start facing, feeling, and discharging your emotions. You can get real about who you are, so you don't have to act out. You don't have to do a poor me to get energy, or you don't have to hit somebody to get a response. You don't have to be hit to get a response. You don't have to go broke in order to get rescued. You don't have to get sick in order to have people hear your truth. Now, I know most of you have heard me talk about all the things that lead up to that. Just for those that haven't, we go through different stages in order to get energy. And that book, The Celestine Prophecy, we were talking about earlier, is a really good book that helps people see how they get energy in a really big way. Another way that I talk about that people get energy is the four stages of telling the truth. You tell your absolute truth, be your real self, reap the reward, suffer the consequences, but really live in the moment as who you are. The very few people do that, and those that do definitely don't fit into our society. And so they happily don't participate, and so we don't really even get to see those people very often, because who would have anything to do with most of us if they operated in ultimate truth? So they're usually the eccentrics on the fringe. The 99.9%, the rest of us, use a variety of techniques to get our truth heard. The first stage we seem to go into is drama or crisis. We create energy that way in order to get a response. Well, you finally made me so mad, I have to tell you how I really feel. Well, why didn't you just tell me? Well, you know, I had to get mad first because I'm not allowed to tell you. You wouldn't listen to me. You wouldn't listen if I said, gee, my side hurts today. You have to, I'm having an appendicitis attack. I'm going in for surgery. Wow, okay, I'm listening to you now. You know, our intensities. If drama and crisis doesn't work, we go into dis-ease. If we can't have a good temper tantrum, we can't create a great drama in order to get the attention we want because we don't know how to do it truthfully, then we'll start getting sick. And that, again, you guys have heard me say this, most of you, but for those that haven't, we get conditioned very early on this one also. You say, I don't want to go to school. You have to go to school. For those of you who have post-depression era families, because when the next depression comes, you better have something to fall back on or you're going to starve. And for the rest of you, it's again, some of us, it's about the families who are such good people that they're not allowed to break a law, which makes it, boy, I'll tell you, once you guys learn to break laws, it totally set you free here. Talk about suckers born every minute. Following laws just like kids in a candy shop. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute, about breaking laws. You know, people just follow these dramas, and if you do, and these children say, I don't want to go to school, well, you have to go to school, you have to follow the laws, and finally the kid goes, well, I'm sick. I have a temperature of 100 and something, and my family, because of how intense it was, he had to have 104. Everybody has 100 to 100 and something. Most kids who had really wonderful families, all you had to do was get 100. I didn't have one of those families. We had to be bursting the thermometer. But I learned real early that to get out of things, you get sick. So, and you'll find that it carries through to people in the workplace. The first thing they learn about the day they want to go to the beach and they don't want to go to work, they don't call up and say, you know, I really don't think I'll come into work today. You're no fun. Or they don't go, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. I've tore my papers up. The dog ate this. My car's got a flat. They've tried that a few times, I'm sure. And then finally what you learn is, do I sound sick enough? I'm sick. And you got to make your voice flex and do all that. And the people go, oh, gee, we hope you'll get to feel better. And they totally know you're not sick. They're going, yeah, I tried that last week. In America, we were taught to get sick in order to really get what you want. And if you'll look around, there's this decade of truth we're talking about. Everybody's coming into their truth. One of the main ways they're doing it is through dis-ease. We're having chronic fatigue from all these people who don't want to be doing what they're doing. I hate this job. This is just for money. It's just to survive. Every single person, I have yet to find a really wonderful, healthy person who's loving what they're doing, come down with chronic fatigue syndrome. I worked in a hospital for years. All the people I'm meeting with chronic fatigue are people who hate their jobs, hate their families, hate their wives, hate their husbands, hate their situation. And they're trying every way they can get out of it. And they tried the truth. They tried drama and crisis, but they didn't tell the real truth. Look, I hate this. I'm leaving. Because our society says, you do that, you're a bad person, or you'll starve, or how dare you? So if I get sick enough, then can I go? Can I not work now because I can't function in the least? Oh, you're going to wheelbarrow me to work? Okay. I think maybe then I'll create cancer. So you get these people who aren't getting listened to, or they're really not brave enough yet. It's so scary to tell their truth that they actually literally have to be killing themselves. The classic example in my world with all the really rich people I work for are the classic type A executives, presidents of this and that. The president of Alcoa, he isn't now, thank goodness. I hope I had something to do with it. This yellow guy, for those of you who know my chat, yellows are these big kids. Here's this yellow with some green, which is the business energy, but 80% yellow was the president of Alcoa. And this guy's this big kid, and he works 35 hours out of 20. I mean, he makes extra hours. He's totally dedicated to the international conglomerate that he was working on. And he was an asshole. He tried that. Everybody hated him, wished he would leave work, but he was trying to get out of work. He was constantly sick with this, that, and the other, and he had his own personal physician who gave him this and injected him with that. I vitamin B, IV'd him with this and that. The man was a walking hospital show. And yet he kept having to go back to work. He's the president of Alcoa. I have to go back to work. So he finally got cancer. And can I quit now? I'm dying. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll really miss you. 2 days later, they hired somebody else who rep to snuff doing the job. He's out. And he's looking back. He's going, well, shit. I was doing this for the company. I really thought I needed to do all this. I was indispensable. And 10 seconds later, they got someone else, and I'm dying of cancer. Hey, Richard. So the watch also in your patterns of telling your truth. These people that are mirroring for us are the real easy ways to show us the patterns. If we miss those patterns, if we don't stay conscious, the unconscious way of getting our truths heard is these four stages. And so we get blasted with them on occasion when we don't pay attention. But if you can shift into the conscious mirroring ones, it's really fun. It's really easy. And you're not surprised when these pop quizzes come, if you're consciously watching everything. Oh, Annie, there goes one for you.
Oh, that was alright.
Okay, I was just checking. okay, it was all right. Pop quiz passed. So watch how you're doing your systems in your life. Watch how you're doing your paying attention, and you'll find that this technique makes things really easy. Really easy. It's all about doing it from the inside out instead of doing everything from the outside in. That makes sense? Did I get that across? Any questions on that? Very simple. Your brain will say, when you say, I am valuable, it'll go, no, you're not. Because it's already believed for how long you're 40% valueless, or pick a number. I'm 20% valueless, so it's got it over. And your brain is not what you're here to fix. Everybody says, do these affirmations that are supposed to fix your brain. They're wonderful little aspirins. And aspirins are palliative. They will fix the ache. I consider them tuning forks. Your job is to memorize that vibration and incorporate it. It doesn't fix anything. It just reminds your brain or your tissue, this is what you're to vibrate at. And if you still stay asleep, you forget. So the affirmation doesn't fix anything, but it can set you up if you'll do the homework of remembering it. But then you're still dealing with your brain and your tissue. So affirmations sort of work, but didn't quite really do the job. For those of you, how many in here have played with affirmations? Did they make significant changes in your life? And did you get pissed off? Did you do them diligently? It's real important to own your power and recognize where you're sending the messages and to get to that core level. Good question. So let's see, I think we finished that other part. The definition is going to be independent for each one of you, but I'll go through what I looked at it as. The definitions of value, power, and safety. Let's maybe look at it this way. Let's take a little kid, a baby who's being bottle fed, and it's in its crib. And this baby does the exact same crying for three different dramas. And so in comes parent number one, who says, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to pick up and fling you against the wall. Then you'll shut up, and I'll show you who's boss here. And that same baby crying again might have the parent that comes in and says, I don't care how much you cry, you can't make me do it. I'm not going to feed you until you stop crying. We'll see who can last out through this game. Right? We'll do a personal power struggle. The first one is, I would say, safety. After being bounced off the walls a few times, I considered it safety. And then we can do a value one. You know, God, you're just so stupid. You're so weak. You're always crying. You know, if you're telling this to a three-month-old, but all that energy, it's not about the words, it's the energy. We can start shaming people very early, like in the body even. And so here's this baby who has this exact same thing happen to it, but it could either be a value, power, or safety thing. So you can look out in the world and see that person who's shaking the kid in the candy line, and depending on how it tracks for you, it might not be about safety. It might be about value. It might be about not being a good person. You don't deserve candy. You can't get what you ask for. How dare you even ask for it? Or I'll show you who's been could have been personal power. I'm the boss here. You're going to go through this gauntlet without looking right or left, and I'm going to make you do it. And I'd even go 5 or 6 times up the row to show the kid who's boss. See, I knew you could do it. I scared you into not looking. We can do power, value, and safety all with the same thing. Our brain will not let us, if you have a value issue, I've discovered that people with value issues can't, they don't believe they're even good enough to get what they need to get in it to have the healing. Like, I just can't tell what it is. I'm so stupid or so valueless, or everybody else seemed to figure it out and I didn't. And red flag. It's a value issue. I can't even get it for myself. The fun part about it is you really don't at first need to know what it is. Just to even consider the possibility that this mirroring thing that's happening is about one of these three issues. And then say to yourself, all of them, valuable, powerful, and safe. Run them through. And as you start tuning up, you'll start getting clearer on it. But the difference between all of them is that they all interface and they can be very similar. And so you'll find that after you do it for a while, it'll become a red flag. You'll get to see the one issue. And everybody I've discovered has a one issue. Like, yes, yeah.
Is it just one or can it be?
Like, they all overlap.
Right.
That's why I say all three of them. But the fun part, what it does bring up for you is it will show you the core issues. It will get you to see them.
Probably
deeper than anything. Yeah. It will allow you to see the value, power, and safety parts as autonomous incidents. They'll stand out. Like for me, it's pretty obvious with safety. It's why I told you the history. But then again, my mom made the rest, see, for the rest of the family, even though she abused them, I left home at 13. I escaped. I got trashed, but I didn't hang along long enough to go through the teenage years where I was beginning to express my autonomy. So I didn't get disempowered. I went out and I was the arrogant, da 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 da. Nobody was going to disempower me. Nobody had a chance. I did the flip side. So I bypassed disempowerment, where the rest of my family, my two brothers and my sister, their issues aren't about safety. They think I'm crazy when I get all worried about this or that. They just want to make sure they're in charge. That's why they all got 16 degrees and everything, and they're all straight-A students, and they're philosophers. And you can have a debate with any one of them, and they'll always have to have the last word. Count on it. And it's not about whether they feel safe or not. They don't feel love-worthy unless they're powerful. And they don't want anybody having the upper hand on them to trash their emotional systems. And they're really fun people. They're not obnoxious. I don't want to insinuate any of that. I get along great. My brothers and sisters, I have great compassion for them. One of them stayed till he was 30. My most brilliant brother, all those brains, and he stayed till he was 30. And what they're finding out is people who go through all these abuse cycles often stay very long with the perpetrators, because that's their comfort zone. I'm so glad I escaped. But it's real clear for me it's safety. But if I'd have stayed longer, I believe I'd have had a mesh. And she really tried to make us all feel valueless and shameful. That's the second one on my list. Now, sometimes value's top one, but 90% of the time for me, it's about safety. And what you'll find as you all practice this, if you'll just take the time to think about it and practice it, in a week or two, it's like easy. You just start, and when your friends bitch about something, you'll go, wow, a month ago I'd have been there saying, yeah, you're right. And you just see all of a sudden that, you want to say to them, don't you just see that it's your issue? It gets so clear. It's crystal clear. And when that part gets crystal clear, you'll never go back again. You'll never fall that asleep where you forget that it's about homework and it's about you. And it doesn't have to be a struggle after that point. And then it does start getting clearer. I recommend just trying it 5 times a day. You don't have to make it your life. What'll happen is once you see how amazing it is and how it really is your life, it will become part of your life. It's automatic. You'll just see a different way. You won't have to be one of the sound asleep Kmart shoppers. Now, I shop at Kmart. I don't mean those who walk into Kmart. I just mean, you know, chasing blue light specials around thinking that's the cat's meow. Look what a find I got. There's more to it than that. Yeah. Did I answer before, Jan? Did I answer that, Annie? Did I get... Okay. Thanks. Yeah, Jan.
See, when people do bitch a lot and so forth, like friends or...
You asked me when your partner or people close to you are going into it what to do. Don't rescue them. In your case, I'll make it real specific for you.
Yeah.
don't rescue them, but don't judge them also in a way that you're trying to make them grow up or make them figure it out or stop them from doing it. It's real important that you take care of yourself. It lovingly have boundaries. So in your case, there isn't just, you're not just doing mirroring homework with your partner. You're also making sure you take care of yourself. Because often what happens with our partners when we have, this week I'm doing Wounded Little Boy, and so when we do Wounded Little Boy, we expect to get loved on, and if we don't, we get really pissed. And it goes all the way back to where we didn't get loved on, no matter what we tried, no matter what kind of drama or crisis we tried, or what kind of dis-ease we created. And so in order to break us of the pattern, somebody has to hold it and say, sorry, I'm not going to medicate you. The trick is, when you say sorry, the rage that comes up can be very intense. And so you must take care of yourself physically, you must take care of yourself emotionally, and it's not about love or lack thereof. If you didn't love, you wouldn't be there. If he didn't love, he wouldn't be participating with you. And so the mirroring thing, when you both have a common language, it helps say, okay, I see this is your issue, I'll hold the space for you. When the person's in rage or when they're in regression or flipped out, it doesn't make sense. And then you just have to take care of yourself. And what you'll see after a while, that after it cools off, there's always a point where you can go back. But part of discretion is learning when you stand there and go, I'm rubber and you're glue, or you just take some space. A technique that I've talked about before, I haven't talked about for a long time, that helped me a lot was designated adult. Did I talk to you about designated adult? You guys have heard me. Richard's heard me do designated adult. It helps. Let's say once you both understand about regression, or you understand that it really is the other person's mirror, both people need to be in agreement with this. So the homework is, come see me and we'll talk about it, about this mirroring thing, because it really can work out great for both people, is when you do something that reminds the other person that they have an issue. In other words, they got pissed off at you or whatever. It's really not about you, but you're reminding them of the issue. That's the proper language. Oh, I see, I did something that reminds you of one of your issues. Granted, it might have been a really shitty thing, or I may have really been slimy, and the reason it bothered you, it's your issue. I'm going to be as long as we're still conscious, because until we get into our patterns, we can do this. Hold up your hand next to your face so that the partner gets that they're not just talking to your usual partner, you're talking to a person who's doing their best to stay conscious. I'm going to be the designated adult right now. I know that I did something that reminded me of you, of your issues, and you're flipped out. I love you. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'll hold the space. I'm not going to tell you you're a bad person. I'm not going to try to hurt you. The value, safety, and power cover them all. I'm going to stay present. And as long as I can hold my hand up, I'll be present. And it gives, you know, if you were talking to me over and over for years and all you see is the same face, you wouldn't know, you wouldn't believe that I'm staying present, because I look the same. I might be a little redder, but pretty much the same. With the designated adult thing, you'll find that when that person, as long as you're either one of you that's doing it, holds the space, when you're conscious, you'll hold that hand up. As soon as you go into regression, or as soon as you flip out, your hand will go down. I remember the first time I did it with Annie. It was very fun. Oh, good, I finally get to be designated adult. Yay, my turn. Okay, I see I did something that really upset you, and it's your issue. I'm going to hold this space. I'm going to be the designated adult. I'm going to love you. I'm not going to go anywhere. You can say what you want, do what you want. As long as you see my hand, I'm here. And then the first thing she says, you've never been an adult a day in your life. I mean, let's just go right to the point. And so my hand goes down. I go, yeah? I didn't even get lactic acid. I didn't have enough time to get my arm even thinking about how I'm going to hold it up. It was like instant. It's amazing. When you're out for the count, your hand goes down. When the hand goes down, that's the key of, you better recognize you're not talking to that person who made those promises anymore. And so now it's back to old patterns. Best to part and make agreements to come back when one of you can be designated adult again. I recommend, because rage is a, our society doesn't let men have rage when they're getting wounded, when they're little, so it just builds and builds. It doesn't let anybody have rage, but it allows women to do it more. It's like it's socially appropriate to hit men, but up until recently. But for the most part, it was okay to pound somebody. You know, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, because you're supposed to not be able to hurt us. How? I don't know. My mom broke her hand on me. She hit pretty hard. What happens is you were allowed to vent rage in some demonstrative ways, though blues don't always do it either. They hold a lot inside. But men are taught not to be rageful. They're always supposed to be cool. I'm cool, I'm cool, everything's fine, and hold it in. And so what you get are these explosions. You get these, if they were trashed physically, you'll get physicality, or you'll get emotional energy that's like a bowling ball coming at you 100 miles an hour. And we've all experienced it from different people. The secret with it is not to know your homework assignment is, if you matched a partner like that, that you obviously have a boundary homework you're doing on, can't I just be me, and do I have to get energized for it? So part of your job is to protect yourself, know your boundaries, and know when to get out, and not feel like you have to stay in there and rescue the person in that fashion. Yes, they'll look really mad as you're going, but that energy pattern does subside, and you can go back in and process some more, or go to the therapist and process more. The bottom line, I believe, that that really helped me is I got beat up so much, and I was supposed to take it and take it and take it. What I finally created in my house in Hawaii is I made an entire room that I called the trash room. I boarded the windows, and it was redwood walls, so I never got to punch holes in the walls like a good old American guy, because it would hurt my hand. But I would break things in there. For me, I created a room where it was socially appropriate for me to have rages and temper tantrums and break things and do energy, and there wasn't any shame involved in it, and the family was probably really glad to see me go in there, because I don't hit it, but I just get, when I would get mad, you could just feel like it was so intense that it would make everybody flip out, because they're so used to seeing me be nice, that when I get into that mode, everybody heads for the hills, even though I wouldn't hit them. And so when I get to the head for the hills mode, they go, oh, it's time for you to go to the trash room. It was great. I would take my favorite thing in there and break the shit out of it. And it only cost me $100, $1,000, what was it? But after a while, I don't need the trash room anymore. It was really good, and I found a way to offload it. Some people you can go to a therapist, and they'll trigger you, and you get to do your energy in there. And hopefully, for men, it's really tricky. They need to find a therapist. They believe they can't overpower, beat up, or scare out the door, going, holy shit, what am I doing? And so, how many therapists are there that are 290 pounds, 6'4", so the guys can come in and say, well, if I do get pissed off, he'll just pin me, and it'll be okay. I know I don't have to worry about hurting him. And so it's really tricky. I had a lot, because that was my issue. Also, the dealing with rage, when I was a therapist, I got a lot of people with rage. And I got a lot of guys, because they loved me. They said, well, you're a pretty big guy. I guess I can get mad with you. That's our logic. It was heaven. So I never once had to pin one of them. And they really did get into rage. But it was really healthy. It was really fun. They got so enraged that they sobbed for hours, because it was so fun to finally get mad and not be told they were bad people. And I never pinned them, which would have been a you're a bad person thing. Have at it. You know, everything's insured. This is why I have an office. Just don't jump out the window. It's four stories up. So the bottom line is, you have to do your boundaries, you have to pay attention to your space. The designated adult thing works really well for the moment that it works. As soon as the hand goes down, it doesn't. And both of you can do it. He could actually flip out. You could do designated adult. He can actually say something or do an energy that flips you out. And in doing the energy, actually feels better, gets conscious and goes, oh, I see, I did something that scares you. It's time for me. You can actually go back and forth. But I really loved my trash room. It was heaven. And it really helped a lot for me. And I'm not afraid to let anybody see me be angry or sad or in tears. It's, when I'm mad, I'm mad. But it's, I'm not going to hit them, or I'm not going to jump on them. So it's a, come see me, Johnny. We'll figure out a plan. It would be a pleasure. Yeah, and know that a lot of us have that. I think it's the biggest male secret that's no secret to the women, just to the guys, that we're so pissed off, and we've been told not, and I grew up in Italy, yeah. So I grew up where you're allowed to do a fuck you, you know, and I still didn't get it all out. Then I come to America, you put your arms around some guy and you're a fag. If you say you express anger, you're not in control, you can't ever make a corporate president with an attitude like that. You need an attitude adjustment. I'll give you an attitude adjustment. Just come over here. Let me show you what it is. You know, America is just, I have great compassion for everybody in America. This is a society, this is one of my chats, I have to say this comment. I've come to the place that everybody brags about freedom. I grew up in a socialist country run by the Christian Democrats, which is a communist party with Christmas decorations on it. And so I grew up in this nice glittery communist country run by military police called the Carabinieri, who throw you in jail. If you even touch a political poster, you're a dead man. It's a very intense place, very beautiful but very intense, with a lot of expression going on. Just drive once around the Colosseum without getting somebody doing this to you, and I'll canonize you. It's impossible. Somebody has to yell at you. It's their job. And I had all this energy, and yet we didn't grow up in freedom. And I come to America, and everybody talks about the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yeah.
Bullshit. The land of the puritanical, don't you dare be different, you know. It was like Orwell said, all pigs are created equal, some are just more equal than others.
Well, it's judgment.
Yeah. I told you in advance this was my judgment. I always own my judgments. And I get to do my homework on it. And the observation is that the men here who would have to do the homework on it are not allowed to. Well, the women now aren't allowed to. Now that we've diagnosed all the men, now we've made it so women aren't allowed to hit guys. At least so it gets real interesting. So now we're going to have trash rooms for women, which is probably very cool. It's a good plan. My first two wives could use it. Psycho part two. So the pattern I'm seeing here, what America is representing on the planet, is complete oppression in a way that I consider more tricky than anything that the Soviets had, or because they said, look, we're going to impress you. You can't do this. This is the way it is. Here they say, oh, you get to have all this. See, look, here's on the news every day. It's another wonderful story about this, that, and this. And then if you try to act different, if you attempt to express yourself, the energy that it brings up instantly is very amazing to me. But the cool part is those who are brave enough to be themselves and be autonomous, those Honey and I were talking about in a real light fashion, they get rewarded here. You get rewarded for being yourself. People bitch about Madonna. I hear them right and left complain. Ching, ching. Bitch about her again. Ching, ching. You know, all the way to the bank. And she is totally her. She's a red. And reds are here to do physical demonstrations. She isn't a blue person. She isn't going to go around and cuddle with people. She's going to fuck them. That's her job. That's what a red does. She's not romantic. Anybody who wants romantic shouldn't live with a red. That they'll just get steamrolled over. She does her job very perfectly. Michael Jackson's a perfect indigo. Society just could only handle it so much that indigos are androgynous. They can only handle so much that indigos love children and animals more than adults, because adults are sound asleep, full of shit beings who can't be. So Michael picks these really sensitive kids, these in the moment things, and they play in the animals, and the parents will create a molestation case. Saw a really cool thing on the news the other day. I love watching TV. It tells me how America's doing, how asleep they are awake. And this guy created a test 2 years ago that he's just now publishing the results on, because he believes that all these sexual abuse cases, even though there's a lot of it here, he believes that the process of interviewing the children creates the stories. And so what this man did is he had interviewers interview children without even using leading questions. For a period of a year, there were 5 interviews, and the same question was asked of them. A story was told, and then a question was asked. The story was, oh, Mr. Jones is going to come in your classroom later today, and he's really a sloppy man who makes lots of noise. And so we just wanted to let you know. That was all they said. Mr. Jones comes in the classroom, he doesn't do a thing wrong, he totally sits there for 1 minute and then leaves. They ask, the kid gets interviewed for the first interview, did Mr. Jones come in your classroom and do any, he came in and sat and he left. Next interview, did Mr. Jones, he came in the room and he really made a mess and had to leave. next interview, we made him go. We all decided to kick him out and that the kids would embellish it. He sat next to the heater under the sofa, and Joey so-and-so walked up to him first. By the end of the fifth interview, they were filling their stories so convincingly and with so much flavor. Oh, it was amazing.